Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Alaska Republic by Stoney Compton, narrated by Kurt Bonham. Prologue. 68 miles south of Delta, Russian America. First Lieutenant Gerald Yamato found himself in the Twin 30 crossfire from three tanks. He felt Satori shudder with each hit. And there were a lot of hits. For a blissful moment, he thought he could stay in the fight. Then his controls went mushy, and the solid stream of smoke from his engine compartment burst into bright flame washing back over his cockpit. Another minute in this situation would kill him. He immediately ejected the canopy, and after jerking his seat restraints free, threw himself into the smoky wake of his doomed P-61, which streamed out of control into the awesome canyon 1,000 feet below the battle. Lieutenant Yamato wrenched his chute around so he could see as much of the battle as possible. While he watched, one of the Eureka fighters suddenly flamed, trailed smoke, and exploded. "Look like Christensen's ship," he said to himself, feeling his heart lurch. Mike was the squadron mascot, a classic, brilliant, self-doomed fuck-off. A tree drifted past, and he realized he had better pay mind to his own predicament. For him, the fight with the Russians was over. An explosion from below pulled his attention to the bottom of the valley. His fighter had impacted at the edge of a river. Someone had claimed it was the Delta River. The wind pushed him farther down the huge canyon. The artist in him took a quick moment to appreciate the majestic beauty of the valley. The miles-long ridge on the far side rippled in shades of reds, pinks, greens, and even light purples, like a technicolor layer cake cut and toppled on its side. Then the pragmatic flyer took over, and he worked his chute in order to come down near the river, rather than hang up in the middle of the forest bordering both sides of the obviously swift-moving water. Even before the ground rushed up and grabbed him, he wondered what equipment he had, and would it be enough? His landing was textbook. Take the shock with his feet together and collapse in a rolling tumble. Unlike the field back in Napa Valley, this one was covered with boulders and rocks the size of his head. He landed on a small boulder, and his feet slid off to the right. He threw his arm out and instantly jerked it to his side again. He couldn't risk breaking it. His shoulder took the majority of the impact and immediately went numb. Jerry threw out his hands and stopped himself. The parachute settled on the rocky floodplain, began to fill from the constant breeze moving alongside the water. He pushed himself up and jerked the shroud lines, collapsing the silk. His shoulder hurt like hell, but he swiftly pulled the lines into a pile at his feet. Just as his hands touched the silk canopy, he heard a massive explosion from above. He looked up the incredible slope. At first he saw nothing but smoke pouring down from the road on the canyon rim. Then he saw awful movement. At least 9 Russian tanks avalanched down the steep wall, rotating in deadly descent, thunderously smashing flat the rocks and trees before crashing into each other or bouncing farther out into the canyon. Huge boulders and entire swaths of trees boiled in a descending, dust-shrouded dance of death. Behind the maelstrom tumbled a boulder larger than any tank, gouging out 60-meter-wide swaths of mountainside before spinning out into the air again, following the doomed Russian war machines into the abyss. A multitude of conflicting thoughts ran through his head as he waited for his companions to finish their preparations for the impending trek. First Lieutenant Jerry Yamato realized he had run out of options. As an officer of the Republic of California Air Force, his first duty was to complete his mission.
"Well, getting shot down in combat certainly ended my mission."
He would never forget the vivid memory of enemy fire hitting Satori, and the sudden lack of control as the P-61 Eureka transformed from sleek fighter plane into burning debris falling out of the sky. Rolling the bird over so he could open the canopy, jerk his seat harness free, and drop out of the cockpit through the flames roaring back from the engine had taken less time to do than it would to describe the actions. The ache in his shoulder attested to his poor landing.
Of course there had to be boulders all over the ground.
His other choice had been to land in the fast-flowing river that threaded through the boulder field. Parachuting into moving water became a recipe for disaster. He accepted the aching shoulder as a reminder of choosing the lesser of two evils. His second duty was to return to his command as soon as possible. Well, that was finally about to commence. However, he hadn't counted on being attacked by a survivor of the Russian armored column that his squadron had all but destroyed. How a man could fall into a valley along with tanks and armored personnel carriers and still live loomed nearly beyond belief. Sergeant Sermanovich had not only survived the fall, he had also tried to kill Jerry with a rifle. Jerry's aim with his Service 45 kept the sergeant alive. Jerry had aimed at the man's head and hit the rifle in his hands instead. The blow had knocked the Russian sergeant off the rock on which he sat and, in his condition, took him out of the fight.
Or took the fight out of him, Jerry mused.
Then things got really complicated. Jerry had an unconscious prisoner who didn't look as if he could live another hour, and he stood in the middle of an unknown vast wilderness that happened to be in enemy territory. The 117th Fighter Squadron had flown many miles over Russian America, and the only sign of human habitation or toil had been the road over the mountain pass where they attacked the Russian armor. To be honest, he had considered putting the damaged Russian out of his misery. For all Jerry knew, this son of a bitch might have shot him down. Killing a man in combat could be considered duty. Putting a bullet through the brain of an unconscious man from 3 feet away seemed like murder. So he woke the soldier and met Sergeant Rudy Sermanovich, who had been the gunner on the lead tank, which meant he was the son of a bitch who shot Jerry down. And when he tried to stand, he passed out again. With a simple litter, Jerry dragged the mercifully unconscious sergeant back to where he had left his parachute and other gear. After a very long, exhausting time, he thought he should be in the right area, but his gear had vanished. Suddenly, a beautiful woman appeared, who had enough words of English to ask if he spoke Russian. And then he saw stars when a rock hit the back of his head. Once he regained consciousness, tied securely with his own parachute lines, he met Pelagian, a 6-foot-tall muscular man who had the blood of numerous races flowing through his veins. Piercing blue eyes and skin the shade of coffee with cream made for a very arresting figure. His wife, Boadicea, stood all of 5 feet, and with her chiseled beauty looked mostly of Alaskan native ancestry. The beautiful woman who had rendered him witless in more ways than one was Magda, their daughter. After Jerry and Rudy both explained their presence, Pelagian had freed them and offered them assistance. A great weight lifted off Jerry's shoulders at that moment. He and the sergeant just might live through this after all. When he explained that he had been shot down while fighting in aid of a Dana revolution against the Tsar, the effect on his rescuers had been electric. It seemed they were all on the same side, except Rudy, of course. Pelagian and his family had been in the bush for months and knew nothing of the battles fought between Russia and the Dana separatist movement and their allies. Jerry wondered if these people could really get him and Sergeant Rudy Sermanovich out of the wilderness alive. He glanced at Magda, who happened to look at him at the same time. Interest shone in her eyes, and that buoyed him immensely.
"Well, I joined the Air Force for adventure. Mother always told me to be careful of what I wished for."
1. Pelagian felt relief that he didn't have to kill the Californian. However, he maintained a close, unobtrusive watch on Lieutenant Jerry Yamato.
So far, the young pilot from the Republic of California impressed him. He could have killed the Russian tanker sergeant, and it would have been the fortunes of war. The sergeant would not have hesitated. In fact, he had tried twice his best to kill the pilot and not succeeded. If he had, there would have been two bodies to bury out there in Rainbow Valley. Instead, they were all busy rigging a litter to haul Sergeant Rudy Sermanovich to Delta, where he could get decent care without being jostled all over the length and breadth of Russian America. 60-odd miles were nothing for a healthy person, a few days' walk. But carrying a litter through what had suddenly become enemy territory might evolve into a much larger challenge. Lieutenant Yamato had told them about the Dena revolution against the Tsar, about the Battle of China, and the death of Slayer of Men, Pelagian's good friend and cousin to Boadicea. His wife had not shown much emotion, but he knew what to look for on the face of the woman he loved. She had taken the news of the death hard, rock hard, and he pitied any Russian soldier who fell into her gun sights. Along with their daughter Magda, they had watched the sleek warplanes attack an unseen Russian armored column far above them on Baranof Pass near Rainbow Ridge. At the beginning, there had been 15 aircraft diving and firing. Only 7 flew away to the north after the shooting stopped. They had witnessed the destruction of 3 of the planes, including Lieutenant Yamato's. The 4th had been destroyed out of their line of sight. Having been a military pilot, in another time and another place, Pelagian knew how close the lieutenant must have been to the men who died back there. He would carefully choose the time to discuss the battle with Lieutenant Yamato. Magda moved around Jerry like a cat, curious, but very wary. Pelagian didn't dwell on that aspect of the situation, since it didn't involve him. He knew his daughter could handle herself, physically and emotionally. Boadicea finished testing the knots on the litter and gave him a long look and a sharp nod.
"Let's go to Delta," he said,
and slipped into the harness, bearing the weight of the front of the litter. Jerry Yamato stumbled again. How far had they walked? How long had they been walking? The litter bearing the wounded Russian tanker sergeant had to weigh 200 pounds at the very least. Pelagian wore the parachute harness bearing the front weight of the litter as if it were a light cloak. The rope sling in the back cut into Jerry's shoulders, and he gripped the end of the litter, constantly lifting it with raw, blistering hands to ease the burden on his aching shoulders. He could barely move, but he gamely continued. Following the man wasn't difficult. Pelagian inspired confidence. The dogs, bearing a goodly share of the load tied to a pole between them, which supported the right and left sides of the litter, seemed as fresh as when they started the journey. Boadicea, Pelagian's small, sharply handsome shamanistic wife, and Magda, their stunningly beautiful daughter, both carried heavy packs with the air of being on an amble in the park. Jerry refused to whine about his condition. He stumbled again. Pelagian said,
"This is a good place,"
and everybody stopped moving. The women dropped their packs and immediately unslung the dogs from the litter. The dogs wandered around and thoroughly marked the area. Pelagian nodded to Jerry, and they lowered the litter to the ground. For the first time, Jerry noticed the clear creek running parallel to their route, and the high grassy meadow surrounded by mountains in which they found themselves. Back and legs aching, he lowered himself to the ground and lay down.
"Lieutenant, wake up. You must eat."
Magda's voice ended Jerry's dream, and his eyes popped open. She knelt next to him, holding out a wooden bowl full of steaming, savory-smelling food. He scrambled to a sitting position and took the bowl. "How long was I asleep?" From the warmth in his face, he knew he was blushing.
"A few hours. Not to worry, you are exhausted. After we eat, everyone will sleep."
Pelagian and Boadicea already sat cross-legged on the ground, eating. Nodding dumbly, he shoveled what proved to be stew into his mouth. Large chunks of meat enhanced by carrots, potatoes, and unknown herbs made for a completely satisfying meal. The worn spoon boasted the twin-headed eagle of Imperial Russia on its handle.
"Nice silverware," he said, glancing at Boadicea and grinning. "The Tsar give it to you for a wedding present?"
"No, I traded beadwork for it," Boadicea said.
Jerry wondered if the woman ever smiled. He noticed Rudy still slept, but the bloody, fouled uniform had vanished, and clean blankets covered him. Jerry hadn't thought about what Rudy's personal condition might be.
"I'm trained in wilderness survival, yet I feel so stupid here," he thought.
"Is there a wife waiting for you in Castroville?"
Magda asked.
"No. I had a girlfriend, but she found somebody else just before the war started. In a way, I'm glad I'm not tied down right now. You never know what's going to happen in a combat situation."
"Then the relationship was not serious to begin with?"
"I wanted it to be for a long time, but no, I don't think it ever was."
Magda frowned.
"So why did you not seek a serious relationship?"
Jerry set his empty bowl beside him, contentedly patted his belly, and stared into her lustrous eyes.
"I'm still working on it."
She smiled and blinked.
"I'm sure you are."
From behind her, she produced two blankets.
"Here is your bedding. I'll see you in a few hours."
She stood and walked away. He watched her body move under the soft moose hide, and wondered if there was a sweetheart waiting for her back in Delta, or wherever they called home. Straightening one blanket on the ground, he wrapped the other around him and fell asleep as soon as he lay down. His plane flew straight toward the flashing muzzles on the row of tanks, but his guns wouldn't fire, nor could he make the aircraft turn away from what was sure to be instant death in mere moments. Bullets hit his plane. Chunks of metal ripped away, the canopy fragmented in silent explosion. He pounded on the stick to make the bird turn, but it wouldn't. Something hit his foot, and he jerked out of the nightmare, still shuddering.
"Wake up, Lieutenant,"
Pelagian said from somewhere in the clouds.
"We're leaving soon."
Jerry let the dream ebb as he lay in his wadded blankets. The ubiquitous daylight felt cool to his sweating face. The aroma of cooking food brought him completely awake. After rolling his blankets together, he set them near Rudy's litter. The sergeant smiled at him.
"Fighting dream battle, yes?"
"Yes. How did you know?"
"Have been in army long time. It happens to most."
"How long until the dreams stop?"
"I'll tell you when mine do."
Jerry thought about that for a moment, and then shook his head.
"So, how do you feel, Sergeant Simonovich? You look better than the last time I saw you."
"For first time since Colonel Lazarev's tank was blown off ridge, I don't hurt. People rarely appreciate lack of pain, but from now forward, I do."
Boadicea walked over and handed them both bowls of food.
"If you wish to heal, Sergeant, you will stay in that litter for 2 more days. Then you may walk on your own if you are capable."
Jerry looked down at his bowl, potatoes and 6 small eggs fried sunny side up.
"I feel good to walk now."
"If you walk today, you will be dead by the end of tomorrow. You have many injuries, which need at least that long to begin healing. 2 more days in the litter, and you may live to see grandchildren."
"Where did you get fresh eggs?" Jerry asked. Boadicea nearly smiled.
"Birds lay them everywhere. You just need to know where to find them."
"I'm glad you knew. Thank you."
Boadicea actually smiled and nodded her head before turning back to her family sitting around the campfire.
"Please help me sit up,"
Simonovich said.
Jerry grabbed the man's wrist and hauled him into a sitting position. It took much less effort than he thought it would. Rudy gasped, sat still for a long moment, then began eating and looking around at the same time.
"We are not in last remembered location. River is different, and Ridge is gone. Who carried me here?"
Between bites, Jerry told him about the dogs and the litter lash-up.
"You helped carry me?"
"I told you. Our war is over until we can return to our own people. Don't you agree?" Sermanovich looked up from his food.
"I agreed in concept. I never believe you mean it."
"Ah, hell, Rudy, I don't mean it. I'm going to shoot you the first chance I get."
"Do not believe that either," Rudy said with a laugh. "You are very different from other armies I have fought. I do not think you are a good soldier, but you are a good man, for which I remain grateful."
"Thanks, I think," Jerry said, running back over it in his mind, trying to decide if he should feel insulted. Pelagian loomed over them before sitting next to the litter.
"We will sleep in Delta the day after tomorrow, if you can both handle the pace. I realize that neither of you are Yukon Cassidy."
Rudy lay back and grinned.
"It's no problem for me."
"Lieutenant?"
The blue eyes gleamed at Jerry. "I've had a good night's sleep and a full meal. You bet I can handle it."
"Good. Today you wear the harness in front."
"But I don't know where I'm going."
"Just follow Magda."
Pelagian gave him a wolfish grin.
"You can do that, can't you?"
"Definitely," Jerry said, holding the man's gaze. "Who's Yukon Cassidy?"
"A warrior of legend, and he holds his own. I am honored to have him as a friend."
"Will I meet him?"
"If you are fortunate."
A half hour later, they stretched out down the trail headed north. Jerry found his stride, and in addition to watching Magda in front of him, appreciated the landscape around them. They climbed a ridge and dropped down into a wide valley. In the distance, Jerry noticed a mountain he had seen from his plane. At this elevation, it loomed even more majestically. He called ahead to Magda.
"What do you call that?"
She glanced back to see where he pointed, followed the direction with her eyes, and came to a complete stop.
"That is Denali, a holy place for our people, and the heart of the Dena Nation."
"Oh, it sort of reminds me of Mount Shasta back in the Republic."
She turned to him, eyes shining.
"You also have a holy mountain?"
"Not everybody regards it that way, but yes."
Bodisha walked back down the trail to them, her eyebrows arched.
"May we continue now?"
Pelagian chuckled and said in a low voice,
"I wouldn't waste any more time if I were you."
Jerry grinned back over his shoulder.
"I thought you were in charge here."
"A woman is not property, and husbands who think otherwise are living in a dream world. My friend Bob told me that, and he was right."
"He sounds like a wise man,"
Rudy commented.
"Is permissible to sing?"
"No,"
Jerry and Pelagian said simultaneously.
"You two worry me."
The lower elevations of the valley brought more water, standing and active. They forded two cold, fast-moving creeks. Jerry noticed early that they followed a trail, a mere suggestion in some places, and well-defined in others. Now the trail bore more unmistakable wheel tracks, as well as those of human and animal.
"How much farther to Delta?" Jerry asked Magda.
She dropped back and, in a low voice, said,
"Just beyond the mountain you see in the distance there."
She pointed. They were going through a vast stretch of willows, more bushes than trees. The tallest stood no more than 2 meters.
"Why are you whispering?"
"Because we are very near a redoubt, and we do not wish to explain your presence to the Russians.
Listen to her, Rudy said in a low voice. They would kill us all.
Even you? Jerry whispered.
I am among enemies and still breathe. Therefore, traitor to the Tsar. The Imperial Russian army is bereft of nuance or sentiment.
Do you want to go in alone?
How to explain presence in this condition? I am too many versts from my command. Perhaps deserter? No. I stay with you.
A bird call drifted back, and Pelagian snapped.
Quiet! Get off the trail!
Magda spoke to the dogs, and they followed her into the brush. She led them down into a small depression and spoke again. All four dogs quietly lay down, tongues lolling. Pelagian slipped out of his sling and pulled a hatchet from the pack Magda had carried.
You all wait here quietly, he said.
He disappeared toward the trail. Jerry unbuckled the harness and gratefully let it slide to the ground. Not since flight school, when he was a cadet, had he expended this much effort on a continuous basis. He eased to the ground next to Rudy's litter and fell into a light doze. Something pressed firmly over his mouth, and his eyes popped open to see Magda holding her other hand up, index finger over her mouth. He nodded his head, and she took her hand off him. She handed him his automatic. He dropped the clip enough to see it was still full. As he quietly pressed the clip back into the pistol butt, he looked around, finally catching Magda's eye again. He elaborately shrugged. She knelt down beside him and pointed toward the wall of brush between them and the trail. Suddenly, he heard the voices. Unknown voices speaking Russian. Jerry slowly pulled the barrel back on the automatic until he could see the round in the chamber. He glanced around. Rudy lay belly down on his litter, holding a huge revolver in both hands and aiming toward the voices. Both Pelagian and Boadicea were nowhere to be seen. Jerry's heartbeat increased and his mouth felt dry. The summer sun beat down from a cloudless sky, and mosquitoes circled around them. Sweat stung his eyes, but he didn't move. The voices were no more than 50 meters away. He could hear boots scuffing the small rocks and dirt on the trail despite the breeze high in the willows. The constant wind wasn't strong enough to get down to where he crouched. Time hadn't slowed this much for him since he had to watch an ice cube melt when he was a child. Back then, he had been restricted to a chair until the ice turned to a puddle. Now, he had no idea what was required of him, other than staying alive. The voices receded slightly, and Jerry's heartbeat slowed. He smiled over at Magda just as she unsuccessfully tried to muffle her sneeze. One of the unseen voices said something short and sharp. Silence grew, and Jerry's heartbeat increased. The barrel of his .45 trembled, and he wished he could stop sweating.
Yah!
Three Russian soldiers burst through the brush, nearly overrunning them. Two held rifles at high port, the third led with his machine pistol pointed forward. Jerry, Magda, and Rudy all shot the man with the machine pistol, who fell flat in front of them, instantly dead. The other two soldiers jerked their weapons down toward the three. Multiple shots rang out, and both men lost all coordination and collapsed, dead before they hit the ground. Silence reigned as dust motes drifted and settled. A hoarse shout in Russian from beyond the brush.
Shout out, comrades!
More silence. Abruptly, a heavy weapon opened up, spraying the area with large-caliber rounds. Three rounds hit the dead Russian directly in front of Jerry, causing the corpse to jerk as if it felt the damage. Somewhere out in the brush, Pelagian said,
Damn! They hit me!
Father!
Magda yelled and started to her feet. Jerry grabbed her arm and jerked her back down. She turned on him with bared teeth.
What do you...
Thick fire stitched through the brush over their heads, blowing the small trees in half with single rounds. The sharp scent of sap and...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?